Welcome to Crime Corner, where we examine all things crime, whether it be on the page, on the screen, on the street, or in the courtroom. I'm Matt Coyle, author of the Rick Cahill Crime Series, and I'll be your host for as long as it takes. My guest tonight, R.G. Belsky, is an author of crime fiction and a journalist in New York City. His newest mystery, Yesterday's News, is the first in a series featuring Claire Carlson, the news director for a New York City TV station. He also penned the Gil Molloy series about a hard-driving newspaper reporter with a penchant for breaking big stories on the front page of the New York Daily News. Belsky is a former managing editor at the Daily News and writes about media from an extensive background in newspapers, magazines, digital, and TV news. At the Daily News, he also held the titles of Metropolitan Editor and Deputy National Editor. He's got a lot of stuff. Before that, he was a Metropolitan Editor of the New York Post and News Editor at Star Magazine. He was most recently the Managing Editor for News at NBCNews.com. His novels have been nominated for the David Award, the Silver Falchion, and have won the Claymore Award. Welcome, R.G. Belsky.
Wow, that guy sounds pretty impressive.
I know, that's a lot to go through.
Yeah, well, it always sounds cool when you put it all when you put a lifetime all together like that. It always sounds good. How you doing, Matt?
Good. How are you? Thanks for coming in too tonight to the corner.
Great. Yeah, I've heard a lot about this show, and I've been looking forward to being on it.
Well, there are four or five people who listen, so obviously they must talk a lot. But so your newest book is called Yesterday's News.
Right.
Surprisingly about the news industry, but tell our listeners a little bit about it.
Yeah, well, basically it's about a kind of a classic cold case, which is always fascinating to me as a journalist. It's about a TV journalist named Claire Carlson, and she became very famous about 15 years ago as a newspaper reporter covering the case of a missing child in New York City, a little girl who went missing on her way to school. And the case was never solved, and she actually wins a Pulitzer for her coverage and, you know, the dramatic stories about the family looking for it. And this all happens, as I said, 15 years ago, and now she's the news director of a television station in New York. And that story kind of made her career, and suddenly the case just sort of explodes again, and there's new evidence and new things going on, and she finds herself back on this story that had kind of created her 15 years ago, which is kind of good and bad, because even though it's a great story, there's a lot of unanswered questions, and we begin to suspect at some point that my character, Claire herself, has some secrets and unanswered questions about the story. So I've always been fascinated by, you know, like most mystery people are, by the idea of a cold case. And I use this as an example. And most of my books are inspired in some way by stories I've covered as a journalist, and I've never forgotten the fact that when I was a young journalist in New York, I covered the case of Eaton Patz, who was probably the most famous case ever in New York.
Yeah.
A little 6-year-old boy who disappeared in Manhattan and was never found. And a few years ago, somebody was finally convicted of that murder. And, you know, I was always thought the fact, well, okay, so the family has some closure. They know for a fact now that the child is dead. But in my case, it's a case where there has never been any closure, and it talks about the impact on the family. So I basically, I take a lot of stuff that I covered as a real-life journalist, and, you know, it's always more fun to write it as fiction because you can make a lot of stuff up as you're going along.
How much, the little kid, I mean, I obviously know the story because I watch 48 Hours and Dateline all the time, and it's just a heartbreaking story. What was his name? Right. He had an unusual name.
Eitan Pates.
Right.
And he was, I believe, 6 years old, and he had, this was 1979, and he sort of became the poster boy for missing children. I think he was the first child to ever be on a milk carton, and, you know, and it's sort of people suddenly realize the whole issue of missing children. So, I mean, my book is a different book. It's not about this case, obviously.
Right.
But I was sort of like, for years and years and years in New York journalism and as an editor, that story stayed alive because no one ever found out what happened. So, you know, when I would work at the New York Post, the New York Daily News, we would be constantly getting tips like, oh, Eaton Pates is still alive. He's 30 years old, and he's living in San Diego or Nova Scotia or someplace. And then people would go looking for him. And, you know, there is something about a missing person case, especially a missing child case, which is even more dramatic than a murder. Because with a murder, you have a body and you have an end. But with a missing child, you don't know what happened to the child.
Right. Just years of agony for the family.
I quote, the beginning of my book is actually a quote from Edna Buchanan, who was a famous crime reporter for the Miami Herald, and basically talks about how missing child and missing person cases are the worst thing in the world. Because, again, with a murder, you have an answer. You know the person's dead. You can grieve for the person, but you know they're gone. When a child goes missing, there are cases like this where there are never any answers, and families go through their whole lives without doing it. And that's kind of what the book is about.
Among other things.
Yes.
So you just started a new – this is the first book in a series. Why did you choose to have a woman protagonist?
Well,
being a man.
I've written about women protagonists in the past. I find, as a journalist, I women protagonists are kind of more interesting in some ways than men, because when you do, you know, there's an awful lot of men that people have written about, but you know, I work with a lot of women journalists, especially in the days when women were having trouble getting the best assignments before, you know, a lot of the advances that have happened. And as a writer, it just becomes more interesting. But the truth of the matter is, this book was originally supposed to be a standalone. I was fascinated by the idea of a woman journalist who is personally involved in this case and goes back and tries to solve it. And I didn't see it as a series, but then after I did it, the character hopefully is so interesting that people, including my publisher, said, well, we should do more of her. And so there will be another Claire Carlson book. But I think if you, you know, I don't want to do any spoilers here, but I think you've read the book, and it really needs to be a woman, because it brings her much closer to what the real things going on in this case are. And I don't think I could have written this case the same way as with a man. With a man, it would be a man writing about a story. In this case, the woman becomes much more personally involved in the story.
Yes, she is. I think I'll spoil it for the readers and say what happened, but maybe I won't.
don't do that!
So, okay, it makes sense to, and Abby read the book, for sure it makes sense to have, and she's an interesting character, to have her as protagonist, but you said you've written women in the past. You're writing in first person, which isn't easy.
Yeah.
What were the challenges that you found writing a woman in first person, or did you have any?
I don't, you get an interesting reaction from people. I have the vast majority of people, including women, have said to me, like, wow, you know, it's really cool you're writing a woman character, it's great. You know, every once in a while you'll get somebody saying, whoa, you know, how can you write a woman character, you're a man. The one question everybody always asks is, you know, like, things like what their clothing and things like that. But I know a lot of women, and, you know, both personally and professionally, and you know, when I have questions about things, you know, I ask them. But look, when you obviously author books too, Matt, and, you know, people ask you questions about, so when you thought about this, you planned this, you know, it's like when I write a book, I don't sit down and plan it. I kind of write the book that I sort of feel, and if I think it's going to be a woman character, then I'm going to write the woman character, as opposed to Gil Molloy, who my previous book, who was a man character. I don't analyze it. I don't think that's probably a good way to go. You kind of write what you feel. And I've always felt, I'm trying to remember the count, but I think I've done like 13 books over my writing career that have been published, more that haven't. But and the majority of them have actually been women, but all of them have really been in the first person. And the problem is, I've tried to write some books that aren't in the first person. Mm-hmm. I like writing in the first person. I think there are advantages and disadvantages, but as a first person character, you really get the character. The character becomes, I mean, most of the great characters that I've loved in mystery fiction, whether it be Philip Marlowe or Spencer or Kinsey Malone or whoever, the author has written them in the first person, not the third person. The only exception to that, and it's a big exception, would be Michael Connelly, who writes
Harry Bosch,
yeah. The third person, which I've never quite understood, even though it's like incredibly successful. And I once met him, and I asked him the question. I said, why didn't you write in the first person? He said, I don't know. I just, like, wanted to write it this way. And I think that's kind of the answer for us. You know, we all tend to write sort of the way we just feel about the character.
Yeah, I think we should all give Connelly some advice about his career so maybe he can get going a little bit.
Yeah, you know, he hasn't been by the way, he's a former newspaper man, too.
I know,
so
yeah.
I have,
yep.
Yeah, a former
LA Times.
LA Times, yeah. And apart from being, in my view, probably the best writer, you know, mystery writer around in terms of 25 years of excellence, he's a hell of a nice guy, too.
He is, and you know, he actually did write a Bosch story in first person when he had Bosch retire, and of course Bosch came back on the force, and he wrote I think it was called The Narrows. He wrote a PI novel, and he had Bosch, I'm about 90% sure he had Bosch in first person.
Really? I've read every one of his books, and I don't ever remember him doing a first person. Now,
I could be wrong,
you know,
but I think he put him in first person for his PI.
Really? Well, you know, and, you know, it's funny because, you know, it was just at Thriller Fest. We talked about that before we went on the air. And, you know, the whole first, third person thing, I find it fascinating. So Lee Child is there. And Lee Child writes the Jack Reacher books, and they alternate. I mean, he writes some Jack Reachers first person and some Jack Reachers third person. And, again, you know, who's going to question Lee Child, you know?
Right.
It works. It works. If somebody else did that, says, oh, no, you can't do that. But it works, so.
Yeah, it works. He's doing okay, too.
Yeah, he's up. Yeah, he and Michael Connelly, I think, are probably doing okay without our help.
Yeah. Excuse me. As mentioned, and we've already talked about your extensive news background, some of the things I liked about yesterday's news is you show us some behind-the-scenes stuff. And one I thought was really interesting because it reminded me of some local news commercials I've seen. Where Claire, I believe it was Claire, was the one responsible for putting the talent in motion during stories, right?
Yeah. So I think I've always been even though most of my career has been in newspapers, and I wound up working for 6 years at NBC here in New York at the end of my career. A lot of that at the network, but also working with some of the local stations. And I was always kind of fascinated by the ideas of like what makes like local, especially local news. And so I have Claire come up with this idea. I think it's called Go TV, which is everyone is in motion.
Right.
People are walking around the set. They're not sitting behind desks. And I make the point that this kind of made her career. It was so successful, and the ratings went up because I've always, you know, unlike newspapers, which tend to in the old days reflect success by the good writing and things. In TV, there are you know, the gimmicks like this. It's the action news helicopter, and it's the AccuWeather, you know, and it's the phrasing that really doesn't mean anything. And so I kind of have a bit of fun of that, and my character Claire is basically like a newswoman at heart who found herself in TV, but she's very skeptical and contemptuous of a lot of the things in TV. So even though it's been successful for her, she's not like a TV person, and so she kind of makes fun of this, and which is good because it gives me a chance to make fun of it.
Yeah. It just, I remember, it reminded me of, I don't know if they're still doing it, but local station, in fact, I'm not even sure they still do news, but they had these commercials where they'd be walking from one part of the news to the next talking about what they do, and I thought it was kind of funny.
Yeah.
But I wanted to give the call-in number in case someone wants to call in and correct me on The Narrows. Someone should do their research out there, and we'll find out if Michael wrote that in first person or not. phone number is 347-884-8266. 347-884-8266, or you can instant message me or contact me on Facebook. We get a fair amount of people listening, but nobody ever calls it because they're scared.
Wouldn't it be funny if Michael Connelly was listening and he now called in and said, no,
that would
no,
be
no,
funny.
I don't have the third person. Yeah.
That would be funny. That would be a one in a million.
All right.
So as we sort of touched upon, you do a nice job of, we didn't really touch specifically on this, but of showing the ambition and the rivalries in the news game. And, of course, you've been writing about news for a while. Have you ever held back on some of that stuff for fear of offending someone you worked with who may see themselves in your books?
No, because, you know, I mean, that's the obvious question everybody says. You know, number one, is that me?
Oh, I'm glad I came up with an obvious question for you.
I think that first off, I write about this stuff with a lot of affection. You know, I mean, I've worked in crazy newsrooms, starting at the New York Post and the New York Daily News, and I worked at Star Magazine for 10 years and then wound up at NBC. And they're all chaotic, crazy places. And I think I write about them mostly with an affection, because I do embrace the insanity of a newsroom and the energy of the newsroom, which produces the news. And what I'm trying to do is to show people what kind of goes on behind the scenes, that, you know, Claire is not an unusual person of all the people I met. Claire is basically a person, and you know this from reading the book, she's a terrific journalist. She's done a lot. She's won awards. She's done big things. But she's a train wreck as a person. I mean, she's been divorced 3 times. Her life is a mess. She's made all these her personal mistakes. When people read the book, they're like, oh, I like Claire, but I want to shake her and say, stop doing that. I've met so many people like that, and, you know, that I when I write about that, and, you know, maybe even to some degree about my own life, because you become so consumed in the newsroom. It's not just the job. It becomes your entire life. I mean, I think I tell the story in this book about Claire getting served divorce papers by one of her husbands, and he sends them to the station because he's like, oh, that's the only way I'll know she'll read them. And she's covering a big story when she gets them, and she doesn't even open them until, you know, the story is done. That's not a person that I work with. It's not somebody that's going to be offended. It's like a lot of people that I've worked with over the years in all these places. So it's really a compilation of a lot of people, and maybe a little bit of myself in there too.
Oh, hopefully, yeah. So you kind of you earlier you sort of touched on the question I was going to get to, and I think the answer is going to surprise me from what you said earlier, because I would take you as a news guy to be I don't know, kind of having things thought out, and but I'm guessing that you, from what you said, you may not outline. Is that true?
Oh, I've never outlined.
See, there you go.
No, I don't. I, you know, again, it's the pantser versus the plotter, the outliner. No,
yeah.
I kind of like to let the story go. I write all my books the same way. Basically, I have an idea at the beginning. I sort of have a general idea where it's going to end, even though it may not end exactly that way. And I have absolutely no idea how it's going to get from the beginning to the end. So I write it, and I like to surprise myself, both in terms of the plot and the characters, because there are characters that can really, and I think this is a good thing, that can really come alive as you're writing the book. I mean, you know, you might be writing somebody who you think is going to be in one scene, and then you're like, oh, I kind of like that person. Let's do more of that. So no, I don't plan it all out. I don't outline it. You know, one of the great things about being a fiction writer for me, as after years as a journalist, is being a journalist is a job. I mean, you know, you have to deal in facts, and you have to check everything and make sure it's right. And people would say to me, like, well, you work all day, then how can you write books? I said, because the books are fun. When I sit down and write a fiction book, I don't have to check the facts. I don't have to make sure the facts are right. I can make it up as I go along. And so I try not to make the fiction writing work. I just write kind of like what I want to write. Which is completely different than as a journalist, where you have to write what the news actually is. So it's been a good combination over the years.
I actually heard Thomas Perry, a great writer, say, because someone asked him the same question. Obviously, you get that question a lot, and I write much the same way you do. They asked him whether he outlined or not, and he said no, he didn't, because he thought, How will I have a better sense of the story a year at the very beginning, as opposed to as I go along? Like in a year of writing the story, I'll know the characters much better, and thus he doesn't outline either, which makes me always feel good when someone doesn't outline. But I know a lot of great writers that do, so there are definitely many.
Oh, I know
many
people that outline like so extensively, they may do like a 200-page outline and then write a 400-page book. You know, I mean, yeah. I've had the opportunity to interview a number of really prominent writers because I'm a contributing editor for the Big Thrill magazine, which is put out by the International Thrillers Writers.
Sure.
And I've been generally interview one or two pretty famous writers a month. And, you get all sorts of things. You get a lot of them who spent a tremendous amount of time outlining. And then the other thing, of course, is you get writers who spend a tremendous amount of time on research. I mean, they'll be like, I spend 6 months researching the novel. See, I don't really relate to that. I tend to write about, I always say that I write about what I know, you know, and I know what a newsroom is like. I don't need to do any news research in a newsroom. I write about New York City. I've lived in New York City most of my life. I know what New York City is about. When I'm writing about other areas, I tend to write about things that places I've been, you know, that I visited. Like if I go to a conference in Nashville or in, I was down in La Jolla near you for a couple years for a podcast. So it's like, I'll set a scene there because I know what it's like. But I don't research. I don't outline. I kind of just write what I know. And, you know, just to point out that I'm not totally crazy in this, Lee Child today was talking about this in an interview, and he said basically, I'm not in any way comparing myself to Lee Child, but he said basically the same thing. He said, I never do any research. I don't want to do research. I just want to write. I write about things that I know. So, there's different kind of writers. I know there's great writers who spend a tremendous – I mean, they actually will not only research, but they'll do the things. They'll actually participate in things so they know the exact feeling. But
Greg Hurwitz.
It's not the way I work.
Yeah, so you're basically saying you're lazy, which I can understand because I'm the same way.
I think that's probably a what? No. Actually, you know what I'm saying. I'll give you the best example of this was a few years ago. The first Gil Molloy book I wrote was called The Kennedy Connection, and it was basically about how a series of present day murders somehow seemed connected with the assassination of President Kennedy in Dallas.
Yeah.
You know, obviously in '63, and I have followed. You know, I was. You know, very young, obviously, when JFK was murdered, but I was alive and I remember it. And I've followed that and been, like, obsessed with JFK and the conspiracy. And I 100% don't believe the Warren Commission or all that. So I decided to put that all in a fictionalized novel. And I thought, well, you know, I should go down to Dealey Plaza and I've never done it. And I never got around to doing it. I wrote the whole book with, you know, just basically on what I knew. And then on the week I think the book came out, I actually went to Dallas for an appearance at a bookstore in Texas. And I went to Dealey Plaza. And I was, like, amazed at everything I had. I had done everything right. I knew everything I had done. And I did not have to go down and research it. You know, it's just, you know, I don't think it's being lazy, although I know you're kidding. I think it's just a matter of the way you write. Now, having said that, you need to be, there's certain things you need to be clear on, and like writing about New York City, for instance. You know, you can't just Google stuff in New York City. I write about New York City because I've lived in New York City, and I know all nuances. And some of these are real small nuances, like things like, you know, like Avenue of the Americas is the name of Sixth Avenue, but New Yorkers don't call it Avenue of the Americas. They call it Sixth Avenue. So if you call it Avenue of the Americas, you're sort of like sounding like, well, I don't know New York.
Yeah.
Houston Street is pronounced Houston, even though it's spelled like Houston, the city.
Right.
And if you read that stuff on Google, you're not going to know all this stuff. So that's why I tend to write, like I say, about things that I personally know, so that if anybody ever questions me on it, I can say, no, I know it. I've walked that street or I've done that thing.
I just wanted to let you know that we've gotten confirmation from a friend of the show, Elena, and that The Narrows is indeed written in first person. So, anyway.
Really?
That's one for me.
Okay.
And she wanted to know if we were giving out free books, if that would consider a call-in. So we'll decide on that later.
Okay. Well, you know, sure.
You want to see? You'll give her a signed copy of yesterday's
sure.
news?
Sure, right. Tell me how to do it, yeah. If she give you that information, which I didn't know, I'm happy to, yeah.
Yeah, we I should have touched on that beforehand. Sometimes we give away free books. But,
sure, no problem. Just tell me later how to do it.
What was the genesis of going from – and are you – you basically are still a journalist, right? Or are you writing –
No, I actually left – I did it for a lot of years. The summary was I worked about back in the 70s and the 80s in the heyday of tabloid journalism. I was at Rupert Murdoch's New York Post, and I was involved in a lot of stuff, including the most famous tabloid headline of all time, Headless Body on Topless Bar, which amazingly enough, if you actually were to Google me, I've done a lot of big stories, but if you were to Google me, that shows up more than anything. I didn't write it, but I was there and I was involved in the story. And then I spent 10 years doing celebrity journalism at the Star, and then I wound up at the New York Daily News for a while. And like I say, most recently I was at NBC, both the local stations like KNBC in Los Angeles and WNBC here in New York and things. But a couple years ago when I got the contract to do the Gil Molloy books, I started writing full-time. So I haven't, but I've been a journalist most of my life, and I still think of myself as a journalist. I think most journalists do. I talked about this, one more Michael Connelly reference. I saw him at BoucherCon a couple years ago, and he was talking about something, and we were talking about newspapers, and he said, well, I still think of myself sometimes as a journalist. And he left journalism in, like, 1994, you know, to write books. So journalists tend to, like, think of themselves as journalists no matter what.
Yeah.
Matt? Yeah, okay. You there? Okay.
Yeah, we just got something not unusual for this show. We're having a looping effect.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know what they're hearing. Oh shit.
I can hear you now. I just had a minute of silence there for a second. That's why.
Yeah, but I'm getting a echo effect. Anyway, we'll try to push through.
Okay.
So, regards to writing mysteries, shit. I'm gonna try it. This is gonna be difficult to do with the echoing effect. But
okay.
How has
I'm not hearing it on this end.
Okay, well, I'm hearing it. I'll try. I'll just keep talking. How has being a newsman helped you in your crime writing?
Well, the easiest thing is it gives me the ideas. You know, people always say, I mean, I've covered everything from, you know, Son of Sam to Eaton Pates to, you know, OJ, you know, all the big crime stories of the past few decades. And most of the books I've done, you know, they're not those stories, but they're certainly inspired them. Like, I'll write about a serial killer who's sort of like inspired by a Son of Sam, and there's so many tabloid crime stories that happen that we covered on a regular basis, and I always say, people, you know, the one question people always ask a mystery author, and probably you've been asked this question, is, so where do you get your ideas? You know, for me, I went to the office every day, because every day there would be these big stories, and what's fun, of course, is taking one of those stories and then doing a kind of fictionalized version of it, you know, the kind of what if. And, you know, one of the ones I did at Gil Molloy called Shooting for the Stars, and it was kind of based on the murder of John Lennon by Mark David Chapman. And, you know, obviously that was a pretty simple, I mean, horrendous story, but it was pretty simple without a lot of questions. Mark David Chapman was this crazed stalker who just killed Lennon for no particular reason other than he was, you know, he was crazy. So I did a story about a celebrity who's gunned down on the streets of New York like that. But my take was, well, what if that wasn't really happened? What if this guy who was, you know, did it supposedly because he was stalking? What if he didn't really do it? What if somebody else did it and there's secrets involved? There's a whole other story going on there. So, you know, that's kind of what I would do. I would take a story that I'd covered in the newsroom and then do a what if. And you know, because fiction is you know, a lot more. Look, tabloid news stories are interesting, but when you can kind of fictionalize them and add a lot of twists, it becomes even more interesting.
So what's next?
So Claire Carlson is the character in yesterday's news. And so she will return. As I say, I originally started off as a standalone, but she became so kind of popular and stuff that the publisher said, well, let's do a series. So there's a second Claire Carlson book, and it's called Below the Fold. Below the Fold refers to a newspaper term. When something isn't a big story, Below the Fold means it's not like at the top of the front page. It's kind of played down. And it's about a murder that's not an important murder that suddenly explodes into an important murder. And so that'll be out in May of 2019. Yesterday's news came out this past May, and this will be out in May of 2019. And I should also, just a couple of things about yesterday's news. One thing I'd point out that if anybody out there is looking to buy it, I mean, obviously feel free to buy the paperback. But for the entire month of July, it's an Amazon Kindle monthly special for 99 cents. So you can buy it for 99 cents on Kindle until the end of July. So, you know, to me, that's a pretty good deal. You know, for 99 cents, I mean, you know, I think it's a pretty good book. For 99 cents, you know, it's you're not investing a lot.
Hey, I want to thank you, Dick, for coming by. I'm going to have to stick my head in the refrigerator because I'm getting a constant echo. But
okay.
I want to thank you for taking the time away from probably a bar scene at
Thriller
Fest.
Yeah. Yes, there was a bar scene. There was a bar scene at Thriller Fest, amazingly enough. Yes.
Well, I'm sure it's ongoing.
Yeah, well, I'm home
will,
now, but there was a bar scene earlier. Yeah, there will be another bar scene tomorrow probably, I'm sure, you know.
That's right. I will email you the info on where to send this free book, and I appreciate that.
Sure.
So thanks for coming by.
Okay, Matt. Really good hooking up with you.
Yeah, I appreciate it. And I apologize for what you're not hearing in my head. I'm glad you're not hearing it because it's
everything is normal on this end. So hopefully the people on listening are hearing it normal too. I can't control what you're hearing, but I'm okay on this end.
I have gotten confirmation that everybody can hear everything fine, but I am going to shoot myself in the head. So thanks again. I'll send you an email. And I want to thank everybody for listening in tonight. I'll have somebody in a couple weeks, which I'll put on Facebook. This is a copyrighted podcast solely owned by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network.
Thanks, man.